And welcome. I'm Dr. Mona Kular, and this is To Immunity and Beyond. I'm a medically trained doctor and nutrition and health coach, and I love helping people find the very best version of themselves. This show is all about living well, feeling well, and most importantly, aging well. The immune system is essentially the body's wellness system, so by understanding and supporting it, we can all reach an optimal level of health. I'll be having conversations with a wide range of experts from around the world on all the areas that can support our immune system to help us live healthier for longer. Let's live life better. Hello and welcome to Immunity and Beyond. Today we're taking a deep dive into Hashimoto's thyroiditis, a form of autoimmune hypothyroidism, with the very lovely Fazana Nasser, who is a functional medicine practitioner and nutritional therapist. Hi, Fazana. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I'm really looking forward to this conversation. Fazana, can we start with finding out a bit more about you? If you could tell us what you do day to day and what your background is, that'd be amazing. Thank you.
Yeah, no, hi, absolutely. So I'm Fazana. I am a nutritional therapist and functional medicine practitioner. And all that means is I'm always trying to look for why something's happening in the first place using nutritional therapy primarily. I work with my area is gut health, autoimmunity, and the microbiome.
And how did you get into this? What's your background? What did you do that led up to this? Why did you sort of choose to specialize in this area of sort of nutritional medicine?
So actually, initially, I graduated from finance and I was working in banking until my late 20s. And it was only then that I developed some autoimmunity, a hormonal imbalance, and burnout. And it was then that I was like prescribed different medications, and I really wanted an alternative route. And in my search to find one, I ended up going back to school and retraining in nutritional therapy so that I could understand what was going on with myself too and kind of join all the dots. Yeah, so then I retrained in nutritional therapy and then functional medicine. And that's why I ended up actually specializing in Hashimoto's too, which is autoimmune thyroid and female health.
And this is a really common thread I find, and I'm sure you do when you talk to other health practitioners in the field, that oftentimes people actually come from quite diverse backgrounds, but when they've experienced their own health issues or come across areas of their health that they haven't been able to access the sort of help they wanted, and they've started looking into things themselves, they've sort of gone on their own journey and then ended up finding so much out, healing themselves in their own way, and then wanting to share that with other people.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I found that when I went back to school as well, a lot of us were mature students and everyone had their own story as to why they were there, or they'd had so much help with nutritional therapy, you know, alternative medicine, that they were inspired to learn more. And I know that was definitely the case with me. It's just like, it wasn't enough to know what to do. You wanted to understand it better and understand the whys and wanted to know all the triggers and, you know, join the dots yourself.
Yeah. And I think patients and clients really appreciate that actually, when they know or they've seen that you've been through a sort of similar process yourself and you're able to talk to them, you know, with a real sense of connection to their journey as well. I sometimes wonder if that helps in the healing process by itself.
Yeah, no, I'm sure it does. Yeah.
So we're going to be talking today about autoimmune disease and specifically about autoimmune thyroid disease, also known as Hashimoto's. Yeah. Should we start by just understanding what autoimmune disease is for people who are listening in? How would we best describe that to people?
So an autoimmune disease is an imbalance in your immune system. It's when your immune system has wrongly identified self as foreign. So your immune system has seen part of your body, which is self, as foreign, and it's gone to attack it. So depending on the part of your body that it's identified as foreign, it will be given a different name. So the autoimmunity will be given a different name. So if your immune system is attacking your skin, it could be, you know, it'd be called psoriasis. If it's attacking your joints, rheumatoid arthritis, if it's attacking your your myelin, multiple sclerosis, if it's attacking your thyroid, it's called Hashimoto's. So depending on what area of your body the immune system is attacking, it's given a different name. And it's when it's mistaken your body as foreign. So it doesn't think it's part of you. So it's doing its job in trying to destroy something, but it's mistaken your body as foreign.
Yeah. And one of the things that one of the big differences between conventional medicine and functional medicine is looking at these autoimmune diseases as that process of autoimmunity rather than those individualized areas. And I think that's where functional medicine can be so much more comprehensive in its approach, rather than just looking at, say, as you say, the thyroid or the skin and treating that bit, understanding that these symptoms are coming from a more, a deeper, more underlying sort of root cause.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's what it is. It's trying to find out why it's happened in the first place. So we know that up to 90% of hypothyroidism is Hashimoto's. So that's like a huge percentage. That's most of hypothyroidism being due to an autoimmune process. And there are three different stages of autoimmunity with Hashimoto's. So you've got stage one, and in stage one, you've already got the autoantibodies against the thyroid, but there's no tissue destruction and your TSH, so your thyroid hormone levels remain stable. In stage two, you have the antibodies, you have some tissue destruction, but your labs, so your thyroid hormones are normal. Okay, so that's when a lot of people start to feel symptoms and they might go to their GP. But because their thyroid labs are normal, they might be given, say, like maybe an antidepressant or, you know, the pill or something like that to try to balance their hormones and balance their mood, because there's nothing else that's coming up in blood. And then you've got stage three, which is where you have the antibodies, the destruction, you have the tissue destruction, and your thyroid labs are out of range. And that's usually when people go to the GP and they see that, you know, their thyroid levels are out. And that's when they are given like thyroid replacement, which is what you need to, you know, give you back your thyroid hormone. And they say that one in every thousand people per year will be at stage three, which is a huge percentage. Mm-hmm. So in conventional medicine, that's where you're diagnosed as stage three, but you're having symptoms before that. And that's when it can be quite, you know, stressful for someone when they don't actually understand what's going on, but they have. So because we're looking at the antibodies as well, we're looking at what's going on behind the scene, what's actually going on, what's, you know, the root cause. So we can pick it up much earlier. And so you can potentially pick it up about 7 years before you're able to see it on your labs. So that's a big difference, and that can make a huge difference as well, being able to pick it up that much earlier, and then actually try to, you know, bring it into remission as much as possible. You can never cure an autoimmune condition, but you can bring it into remission, meaning that you're free from symptoms.
Yeah. And before we dive much deeper into Hashimoto's, when we look at autoimmune disease in general, a lot of them tend to be connected because, as we say, it comes down to this underlying sort of dysfunction in the immune system where it's looking at self and recognizing it as foreign. Do we know much about why and how this happens in the first place? What's the current understanding of that?
Well, we know for autoimmunity to be present, there needs to be three things. So we used to call it a three-legged stool. They have since then added something else, but the three-legged stool was, first of all, you have to have the genetic predisposition. Okay. Sure. So you need to have the genes, and they, with Hashimoto's, there are about 90 different genes that can make you more susceptible to it, which is huge. There's loads. You need to have a leaky gut, intestinal permeability. And we can talk about that. Mm-hmm. And then you need to have a trigger. Okay. And recently they've also added to the stool, they've also added the microbiome. So which is huge. And we can talk about that as well. But you need to have, you know, the genetics, the leaky gut, and the microbiome would come into that too. And then also a trigger. So a trigger, there's a whole web with Hashimoto's. There are so many things that can trigger it, you know, diet, lifestyle, infections, you know, environmental toxins. There are a lot of things, and we can talk about that in more detail, but it can, you need those to be present first.
And that's a really interesting useful way for people listening who might not know a lot about autoimmune diseases and Hashimoto's to look at things. Because actually, even if you have that genetic predisposition, if you then don't have, say, the gut permeability issues, the trigger, the microbiome dysbiosis, those genetic that genetic disposition may never express itself, actually, if you don't then give that the other factors it needs. And so I think that's quite empowering for people to understand and realise.
No, absolutely. There's so much you can do. And, you know, yeah, you can do that with prevention. But also, if you've been given a diagnosis, there's also so much that you can do to work on the triggers. And that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to find the triggers and, like, you know, work on them. And some of them are very basic. And then also heal the gut, you know, work with the gut, heal the leaky gut. So you have got control, you know, of 2/3 of it. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that.
That can be done.
So Hashimoto's thyroiditis, who does it tend to affect? When and how does it tend to present? And why does it arise?
Okay, so it tends to affect 90% of people. It affects is women. And it tends to affect women between the ages of about 20 to 60 years old. Now, that age is getting younger and younger. So there was a study that came out recently that showed air pollution was is a trigger for a lot of people. And due to the amount of air pollution, they were starting to see younger and younger people being diagnosed with Hashimoto's. But generally the age is about 20 to 60, but obviously it can come out of that as well. The symptoms of hyperthyroidism, Hashimoto's, we have a thyroid receptor on every single one of our cells in our body, okay? So the symptoms can be so vast and they can affect absolutely anything because thyroid hormone is needed for everything. So, you know, it can affect everything. And a lot of the symptoms are slowing down in something. So one of the biggest symptoms is you have thyroid receptors in your gut. One of the biggest symptoms is constipation, you know, slowing down. It can be depression, you know, lower mood. It can be fatigue, you know, more tired. A lot of the, you know, symptoms are slowing down because you haven't got enough of the hormone. A lot of people find that the outer 1/3 of their eyebrow is lost, so they can lose that. You can lose, you know, loss of hair, infertility, problems with your cycle. You know, it's huge because we have
it affects so many areas. Yeah, and as you mentioned earlier, a lot of the symptoms when people present to GPs traditionally, the symptoms can seem quite vague in many ways and difficult to pin down. And if patients are in that stage before the lab tests change, as you said, they can often end up with the wrong treatment, can't they? Like antidepressants or other things, which are just targeting these symptoms without finding out what's going on.
Yeah.
How much do the symptoms tend to appear in those sort of, you know, you mentioned the stages, stage one, stage two, stage three. At stage one, are we talking about just the antibodies, but no symptoms? When do symptoms tend to appear and do they get worse as you progress through those stages?
Yeah. So stage one, you generally don't see any symptoms. You've just got the antibodies. And because there's no tissue destruction, you generally don't see any symptoms. In stage two, that's when you start to see tissue destruction. And so you start to see symptoms, but symptoms, as the tissue does get destroyed, you can also get an influx of thyroid hormone. So if you get a destruction, you can get more thyroid hormone too. So sometimes it can kind of wave between the two. So you can have excess thyroid hormone, and then as some of the tissue is destroyed, you then end up with lower thyroid hormone. So it can wave, you will generally see the symptoms in stage two. Yeah. But they're, because the thyroid hormones are normal, nothing's really done about that.
No. So when the symptoms, when the thyroid levels are waving in that stage, as you say, because in those early stages, as you said, you can get sort of these higher levels of thyroid and then lower. Does that mask the symptoms a little bit, or does it just make it a bit more confusing because you could have symptoms of hyper and then hypothyroidism?
Yeah. It can mask it. And also when you're getting tested with your GP, when you're getting tested, it's one point in time. So yeah. You could be getting tested when you're feeling really low. But then, you know, at that time, maybe you're getting a bit of a, you know, excess thyroid hormone. So your labs look normal, or they look, you know, better than normal. So it can mask it. And even when you are given the medication, you know, you can change depending on how bad the autoimmunity is. Your thyroid hormones can change considerably, you know, during the day, during the week.
Yeah. And just to clarify what you said, just so that people don't get too worried, you know, when you talk about the thyroid being destroyed, so what's actually happening there is it's the immune system attacking the cells of our thyroid gland.
Yeah. So as the immune system attacks the cells of your thyroid gland, you have less thyroid being made. And that's when your TSH will go up. And that's the lab that your GP will test, is your TSH. And when they see that's raised and you're not getting enough T4, they will give you levothyroxine or some sort of thyroid hormone to replace the thyroid hormone that is being lost due to this.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
It used to be hard to find the world's most wonderful alcohol-free drinks. Not anymore. Whether it's a health thing, a lifestyle thing, or you're trying new things, make sure you save yourself from the guessing game of the supermarket shelves and shop with zerozilchzip.co.uk for the world's most carefully curated range of alcohol-free beers, wines, spirits, and more. Health Radio listeners can save 5% with the code HEALTH5. Visit zerozilchzip.co.uk or click our banner on the UK Health Radio website. Discover alcohol freedom with Zero Zilch Zip, because nothing's better.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
So as you say, when patients go to a GP, usually the test that we've done is a TSH, which is a thyroid stimulating hormone test. And that gives you one, one piece of the puzzle. But really, if you don't do the autoantibodies, you don't then understand if the thyroid disease is due to autoimmune disease. You can be missing a huge element there. When people come and see you, what's your first line? How do you diagnose?
Well, I can't diagnose it as a nutritional therapist. It has to be diagnosed through a doctor.
Well, do you see people who come to you who haven't been diagnosed, who you suspect have it?
Yeah, in which case we'll do the labs and we'll check. We'll do a complete thyroid panel, which includes T4, T3, reverse T3 and the antibodies. So you've got thyroperoxidase antibodies and you've got thyroglobulin antibodies. So we'll do a full thyroid panel to see if there is autoimmunity involved or not.
Yeah. And can you just talk us through those then? So T4, T3 and reverse T3, what do they mean?
So T4 is your active thyroid hormone. Your T4 is 90% of thyroid hormone being made is T4, but it's inactive. It has to be converted to T3, which is active. Conversion can happen in different places. A lot of it happens in the gut, in the liver. So if there's any imbalances there, that can have an effect as well. So T3 is your active thyroid hormone. Reverse T3 is inactive thyroid hormone. So if you've been really stressed out, if your body wants you to slow down, you might be taking your thyroid hormone and actually putting it into T3, reverse T3, which kind of gives you less access to active thyroid hormone. So as a way for your body to slow down. We've got your antibodies, you've got thyroperoxidase and you've got thyroglobulin, and they're two different antibodies to your thyroid gland. So a lot of GPs are now actually testing for thyroperoxidase. So they will test. And then you've got thyroglobulin. So if either one of those are out of range, or, you know, if they're raised, that would be indicative of Hashimoto's. And that's how it's diagnosed, having raised either thyroperoxidase or thyroglobulin antibody.
And something I've often seen is that women, even when they're treated, or men, but obviously it's just more likely to happen, even when they're treated with levothyroxine, so even when they're having that thyroid hormone being, they can still feel quite rubbish, can't they, really, and still be experiencing symptoms. And a lot of the time now, I believe that's because many of the underlying issues haven't been addressed. And I think that's something we can go into in a bit more detail.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So levothyroxine is T4. And like I said, T4 is not the active thyroid hormone. It needs to be converted to T3. For that to take place, you need certain nutrients. So selenium, zinc, for example, iron. And so if you're low in these nutrients, you're not going to be able to make the conversion correctly. So even though you're given the T4, if you can't convert it, you're still going to be feeling low in energy and you're still going to have the symptoms. But also Hashimoto's is an inflammatory condition. Okay. Yeah. So inflammation can make your receptors less able to take, you know, the thyroid hormone, makes it less in an inflammatory environment. It just makes, you know, T3 less able to sit on the receptor correctly. But that plays a part as well, not only the nutrient deficiencies, but also the inflammatory environment of Hashimoto's.
So if we look at Hashimoto specifically, you mentioned the three main factors and then the fourth one. So we've got the genetic predisposition. Should we start with talking about gut permeability or leaky gut and how that could actually be a contributing factor to developing?
Yeah, so leaky gut. So leaky gut, we've got in your gut, you've got junctions, okay, and they should be tight. And what happens with leaky gut, it just means, so our gut lining is one cell thick, so it's not very thick at all, and you can get holes in this junction, okay, and if you get holes, contents from your gut can get into your bloodstream. And so anything that gets into your bloodstream that hasn't been broken down correctly can cause an immune reaction. So for example, gluten.
Yeah, I was going to say gluten tends to be a big one for people with Hashimoto's, doesn't it, actually?
Yeah, there's a lot of studies now that are showing that there's something called molecular mimicry between gluten and your thyroid. Yeah. So the way that works is the protein in gluten, it has an amino acid sequence. So, you know, all protein structures, everything protein gets broken down into your body. So instead of being like a piece of protein, and gets broken down into amino acids. So amino acids are individual pieces, individual components.
Yeah, the building blocks of the protein.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Building blocks of protein. And so your body takes your protein, it breaks it down into amino acids, and then those amino acids then get built up into different protein components for your body to use. So for the case with gluten, gluten can't get broken down completely by anyone. So that protein structure, you still have that you have an amino acid structure that doesn't get broken down. And for example, say that amino acid structure is A, B, C, D. Okay. So you've got this like clump of amino acids from gluten, which is A, B, C, D. Because you're unable to break it down, and we know that, you know, a leaky gut is a predisposition, that amino acid sequence is going to get into your bloodstream. Okay. And your immune system is going to see this amino acid sequence, and it's going to attack it to get rid of it from your bloodstream, which is exactly what your immune system should do. Gluten should not be there. It should take it out. So your immune system goes after this clump of gluten, which is ABCD, to get it out of the bloodstream. So your immune system is going around the bloodstream looking for ABCD and just, you know, removing it.
Yeah.
The only thing is your thyroid gland also has this amino acid sequence ABCD. Okay. So when the immune system comes to your thyroid gland, it sees ABCD and it mistakes it for the gluten and it starts to destroy it. So with Hashimoto's, one of the things that we do is, you know, one of the first things we want to do is to take out the gluten, because it's just making everything worse. It's, you know, it's adding fuel to the fire. It's not going to get rid of the Hashimoto's. Actually, it does in some people. For some people, just the gluten is a trigger in and of itself, and taking the gluten out can bring down especially TPO, thyroperoxidase antibodies.
I was going to say, it's been shown that when you remove gluten, those antibodies come right down. Yeah. Because as you say, it's not looking for that sequence all the time, so it doesn't have to have that same level of activity.
So it definitely calms the system down. So with some people, that is a trigger, and that will be the only trigger. It's usually more than that that's going on, but it definitely calms the system down. And there's a lot of studies to support that. The only thing is, you have to be really careful when you're going gluten-free too, because a lot of people will be like, oh, I can't have gluten. I'm going to go gluten-free. And that's really dangerous as well, because if you go straight from gluten to a gluten-free diet, you know, you're replacing, most people get about 70% of their prebiotics from gluten. So prebiotics are fibers, and we need the fibers to feed the good microbes in your gut. I'll touch on that more in a second. And then when you take gluten out and then you replace it with gluten-free products are starches. There's no fiber in it. There's like a lot of, you know, you're missing out on a lot of goodness. So for example, if you were having Weetabix for breakfast, and then you swap it to something else, or if you had bread and you're swapping it to a gluten-free bread, which is just starches, you're losing out on a lot of those prebiotics. And that can actually be more detrimental, because now, although the gluten was inflammatory, it was actually also, it was a prebiotic and feeding the good microbes in the gut. Yeah. And when people stop eating gluten and go for gluten-free, you can actually lose a lot of your microbes, and that can negatively impact your gut health. So it's really important when you go gluten-free that you replace the gluten products with plant-based foods. So, you know, you can have your gluten-free, but you've got to also make sure, you know, you're having you know, extra plants. So if you are having, you know, if you were having something like a piece of toast for breakfast, have your piece of toast, but then add some almond butter to it and some sliced banana, so you've got extra plants on it too. If you were having like toasted egg, have your toast, but have your egg, but also add maybe some baked beans, you know, maybe some spinach, maybe some, you know, mushrooms, to get those extra plants. And plants, you know, as anything, it's fruit, vegetables, nuts, seeds, beans, legumes, herbs, teas. So there's a lot to choose from. And also when we're talking about, you know, leaky gut, we're talking about healing a leaky gut. And it's really, really important that we get a lot of plants in and that we feed our microbiome, because we know gut health is about diversity. Diversity of different microbes that are in the gut. And we can increase the diversity of the microbes that are in the gut by increasing the diversity of the fruits and vegetables and plants that we eat. So that's really, really important. You know, it's not that, oh, I suddenly can't eat this food and I have to be more restrictive. It's about actually trying to increase variety and what you're eating to support gut health, which is why it's really important to, you know, be working with someone on this, because, you know, to make sure that you continue to nourish and feed your gut and support your immune health all the time.
Yeah. And I'm really glad you've raised that point, because it's very easy nowadays to go online or on social media and just find exclusion diets or find things that people say help. But if you're not doing it under the you know, under the guidance of a professional, you can, as you say, end up cutting out a whole area of your diet, but not replacing it adequately with other things that are going to be beneficial, and potentially then making things worse rather than better. So, and especially in the case of something as complex as Hashimoto's, really, yeah, you need to be doing everything you can to be supporting that, especially the gut health and gut permeability. You know, we know that, as you say, having that diverse microbiome is so important. And the recommendation is to aim for around 30 different types of plant-based foods per week, if possible. And that sounds like a lot, but actually, when you consider that you can also include nuts and seeds, all these different fruits and vegetables, grains, or, well, not if you're having gluten, but, you know, so you can still get those in just by trying new things, getting lots of colour onto your plate. Any other tips on that front?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Like you say, you know, you want to aim for about 30, and eating the rainbow. So, you know, in your meals, trying to get all the colours in there. But like some of, you know, people's favourite foods, like dark chocolate, that, you know, the polyphenols in that, yeah, feed the good microbes in your gut. So it's, and with the different colours, so even things like green tea, you know, colourful fruits and vegetables, the polyphenols, the colours in that are also supporting the microbes. Teas, so, you know, a lot of people will have tea, you know, switching up your tea, so that, you know, the polyphenols in your tea are also feeding the microbes. So if you have chamomile one day, the next day maybe have rosehip, and the next day have maybe nettle. So just switching up your teas, and that way you can get that's an easy way to get seven different plant foods into your diet, you know, every week by having different teas.
When I make spices, they're also great, aren't they? Just using different herbs and spices in your cooking, another, yeah, great way to get that diversity in as well.
Yeah. And if you don't have fresh, you can use dried, and studies also show that dried are just as good. And, you know, not only in feeding the microbes, but antioxidants and stuff like that, when cooking. So whenever I cook something, you know, if you cook something, a lot of people will use onions as a base. You could do like different kinds of onions just to make it easy. So you could use a yellow onion, a red onion, a shallot, a spring onion, a leek. So that's five different kinds of plant foods. And different kinds of the same food count as different plant foods. So just having different onions, they count as different plant foods, even though they might be different varieties of the same food. And that's because they're feeding different microbes in the gut. And you can do that with everything that you're eating. So apples, you know, you could rotate and buy different kinds of apples, you know, getting different colored peppers, different colored tomatoes, all count as different, you know, plant foods. And it's a really good hack to try to up your plants that way as well.
Yeah, I love that, actually, because for people who might find it a bit more difficult to try new things or like to stick with what they are familiar with, the apples one, for example, is great, because if you like apples in general, but actually you can try three or four different varieties of apple, that's, yeah, still apple, but you've got four different sort of stimulation for the different gut bacteria. So that's a brilliant hack. Thank, yeah, you for that one.
No, absolutely. Also salads. If you buy a mixed bag of salads, you've got about four or five different leaves. They're all going to feed different microbes. Yeah. Beans, you can get mixed jars. Some jars have, you know, beans and legumes, and you've got 10 different varieties in one can. So, you know, there is, you know, ways to do it. Rice, you know, they sell, you know, or quinoa rice, you can get like mixed bags. So you've got wild, brown and red rice together, and you know, the different colors of quinoa too, just mixing different kinds of the same food. Yeah, it's a really easy way to get more plants, and you'll find that you go well above the 30 very quickly with just little hacks like that.
Yeah So actually it is a lot easier than people think when you just look at simple swaps like that, or simple additions.
Yeah, so it's definitely hard. So
that's leaky gut, and actually there are other things in our lifestyle that contribute to leaky gut too, as well as our sort of nutrition, sleep, stress, over exercising. All of these things can also tax the gut lining and make it more permeable as well.
Yeah, no, absolutely. All those things have a huge impact, you know, not only on your leaky gut, but even triggering all those are all triggers as well for Hashimoto's, you know. Yeah. Independent of leaky gut, they will cause leaky gut, but
there are some overlaps there actually then, aren't there, between sort of looking after that gut health and then moving on into the things that then trigger.
Yeah, I mean, with Hashimoto's, it's a whole web where you've got, you know, you've got actual infections in your gut that can trigger it. So we know infections like H. pylori, like Candida, like Yersinia, you know, Epstein-Barr virus, cytomegalovirus, you know, all these things, you know, infections, pathogens, they're triggers for Hashimoto's. We know things like BPA. BPA is an endocrine disruptor. You know, that can be a trigger for Hashimoto's. It can also, BPA can actually sit on your, when we talked about, you know, people might take T4 but not feel better. Things like plastics can actually go sit on your T3 receptor and block it. So your thyroid hormone can't take its place. So, you know, plastics is huge, right? Yeah. It actually works as a goitrogen as well, blocking your thyroid gland. So it, and actually triggering Hashimoto. So there's so many different ways in which plastics are just huge endocrine disruptors. So taking those things out, you know, swapping for glass, avoiding till receipts, not drinking from plastic bottles, you know, things like, you know, if you have a coffee and it's got a plastic lid, the heat will heat up the BPA and release more into your system. So just being really careful with BPA and trying to avoid it as much as, you know, lifestyle change that you can do.
And more, there has been a better movement towards this. There are more BPA free products available now, which is great, but it's still there in things that you wouldn't think about. So it's not just those really obvious Tupperware containers or bottles. Actually, like you say, it's the lid of your coffee cup, the paper till receipts, just other bits of packaging that you might buy food in. You know, you don't realize there is BPA and other chemicals actually that are leaching out of that plastic into your food products.
But also their studies have shown that they're replacing BPA with BPS and other stuff. They're actually just as bad, if not worse. So, you know, just to avoid anything plastic altogether. But yeah, they're in everything and they're leaching into everything. Like cans, you know, tomato cans, you know, you have to be careful with heat and you have to be extra careful with acid too. So like I said, with the coffee, when you heat, having something hot through a coffee lid, which is plastic, you're going to release more BPA. Acid, so cans, so tin cans with tomatoes in them, the acid is going to leach the BPA out into the tomatoes, so you get, you know, more of it. So things like that, you want to try to go buy your tomatoes in glass containers, especially if you have, you know, Hashimoto's, things like that. Yeah.
So if we just go over these triggers again, so we've mentioned things like sleep and stress, which will affect not just your gut, but be a trigger as well. We've mentioned infections, and you've covered quite a few of those. We've mentioned these sort of endocrine disruptors. What other sorts of things could be triggers for something like Hashimoto's?
Stress, unhealthy relationships, pesticides, fire retardants. So like if you've got a new sofa, sometimes, you know, there's fire retardants in the sofa. Sometimes that can trigger someone.
Heavy metals, I think, have been...
Heavy metals, yeah. Metals in general, mercury, lead, all of these.
Environmental toxins as well.
Environmental toxins, hormones, imbalanced hormones, lack of rest, sodium. Sodium can be... too much sodium can be a trigger for some people. Right. So when someone is having trouble getting someone back into remission, sometimes putting them on a low sodium diet can be really helpful. Blood sugar balancing is another one. So blood sugar balancing is really important, and actually it's the foundation of taking care of all of your hormonal health. And what blood sugar balancing means is having meals that allow your blood sugar levels to stay constant. So for example, if you have like a croissant and an orange juice for breakfast, that's going to spike your blood sugar level. So what you want to do is you want to, in the meals that you have protein and fat and fiber. And that slows down the release of sugar into your bloodstream, keeping your blood, you know, your blood sugar stable. For some people, just getting them to manage the blood sugars can bring someone into remission, you know, reduce just antibodies, because high blood sugars is inflammatory.
Yeah. So a lot of this is actually about getting inflammation down. And autoimmunity is an inflammatory condition. You know, it's when the immune system is in overdrive, active against things it doesn't need to be. And that's all about inflammation.
Yeah.
What does the time relation tend to be between, say, infection or stress or any of these other triggers? Can there be years between that and presentation and a sort of symptoms development, or does it tend to happen quite quickly, or is this just really variable?
No, it's usually about 7 years.
Really? Okay. So people might not even link things together or know.
Which is why you always want to do complete labs for the thyroid, which is why you always want to check if you have any autoantibodies, because you can pick them up 7 years before you have any symptoms, see any symptoms before you have to take, you know, replacement medication. And that's another big question. A lot of people try to avoid taking thyroid medication and they want to sort their, you know, the rest of it out. You cannot do that. You cannot, you have to always take thyroid medication, because without your thyroid functioning, you cannot fix anything, and you will not be able to get to the triggers and to support your body if you do not have thyroid, you know, adequate thyroid medication, which is something that's really important.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
It used to be hard to find the world's most wonderful alcohol-free drinks. Not anymore. Whether it's a health thing, a lifestyle thing, or you're trying new things, make sure you save yourself from the guessing game of the supermarket shelves and shop with zerozilchzip.co.uk for the world's most carefully curated range of alcohol-free beers, wines, spirits, and more. Health Radio listeners can save 5% with the code HEALTH5. Visit zerozilchzip.co.uk or click our banner on the UK Health Radio website. Discover alcohol freedom with Zero Zilch Zip, because nothing's better.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
But that 7 years is really interesting, isn't it? That's a long time then, that if you knew that you had the antibodies, that you have got to put other things in place or to address things or do some gut healing and just look at lifestyle factors, etc. So if we look at nutrition, for example, what are the main recommendations you give to your clients? I mean, is it different if they've got antibodies but not progressed to stage 2 or 3 compared to if they come to you and they're already in those later stages, or are the nutritional considerations the same? I mean, we've talked about gluten already.
Yeah, no, it's about getting, like, you know, supporting your microbiome. It's getting a good diversity of fruits and vegetables in, you know, it's looking at, everyone is different. It's such a personalized approach. Yeah. I mean, some nutrients like vitamin D, always look at your vitamin D. We know low levels of vitamin D are a trigger for Hashimoto's, and sometimes just getting your levels up can, you know, can reduce the antibodies. So, you know, checking someone's vitamin D levels, you always need to check, because you can't just supplement because you don't know what the baseline is. So always check that.
Any other specific nutrients that tend to be associated with Hashimoto's?
So selenium is really important. So selenium really helps with thyroid health. It helps with glutathione, which is our major antioxidant. And it's, you know, it helps bring down inflammation as well. So lots of studies support that selenium can be really, really helpful. The studies that have been done have shown about 200 micrograms a day over 3 months, you know, bring TPO antibodies down. It had less of an effect on thyroglobulin antibodies, but it showed really promising effects with TPO antibodies. Uh-huh. Magnesium can be a trigger, but that's only if they have really low levels of magnesium, not just suboptimal, but very, very low levels of magnesium. That can be a trigger if the levels are very, very low. You know, but a lot, and also, you know, gut health, right? So when you're having the fiber, you're feeding your microbes and they're producing something called short chain fatty acids. And that's also what, if people take a probiotic, you're taking a probiotic because the probiotics are producing these, you know, short chain fatty acids, which are bringing inflammation down. They're healing leaky gut. They're improving mood. They have an effect on, you know, pretty much every system of your body when you're getting enough fiber and you're feeding them well enough and they're producing enough short chain fatty acids. It's so anti-inflammatory.
It's amazing how, as we've been talking, so much relates back to the gut every time. It's the foundation of so much of our health, isn't it?
You know, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it has an effect not just on your gut, but every single system of your body.
What about iodine and iron? I know a lot of people think of, they relate iodine to thyroid. Quite a lot of people probably are. Well, it depends on your diet, doesn't it? Do you see much iodine deficiency? Do you test for that?
Yes, I do. But there's a lot of people used to supplement with iodine for thyroid health, but the studies are not showing.
No.
You what you need for your thyroid health, you will get enough from diet. You can do a test to see what iodine levels are like, but your thyroid is very good at trapping iodine to use it. You don't want to supplement with iodine. I know a lot of people have in the past, but that is not what the research shows, because that can be very inflammatory and that can actually make things worse if you are supplementing with iodine. Sometimes people take it and they feel better, but that's usually because it's caused some inflammation and that's leached out extra thyroid hormones, which is why some people can get a little bit more, feel a bit more better after that. But it's not something to supplement. Iron, you need iron for conversion for your thyroid hormones, so low iron levels can affect thyroid health. But then again, with iron, it's a sweet spot. You don't want too little, you don't want too much. Too much is inflammatory as well. So it's always about testing to see where someone's levels are. And if, you know, and also if they're low, why are they low? Yeah. What's caused them to be low? You know, are they not absorbing it from the diet? Why aren't they absorbing it from the diet? You know, are they losing it, you know, through their menstrual cycle, through heavy periods? Why are they having heavy periods? Again, it's asking the questions why, to find out why the iron levels might not be good.
Yeah. And again, so much of it comes back to this asking why, you know, why is this happening in the first place, and keeping on tracing things backwards to find that sort of root cause rather than just suppressing symptoms here and there to try and make things better, because ultimately they end up coming out in other ways, in other places, if there's something that isn't physiologically optimized as it should be.
Yeah, no, 100%.
So when you treat patients, you try and help patients who have Hashimoto's, you've mentioned gluten as potentially something to eliminate. You've mentioned sodium. What other sorts of things do you do? Again, I understand it's very individual and will depend very much on that particular individual's symptoms and also their results and where they're at. Are there any sort of main things that tend to be overarching for most patients that will be helpful?
I mean, like you said, it's a very personalized approach. So, you know, I'm always looking at what they're eating, you know, what their medical history is, what their, you know, relationships are like. But, you know, foundational stuff, you know, that you'd be looking at to incorporate initially would be, are they blood sugar balancing their meals? You know, are you getting protein, fat and fiber in every single meal that you have? Are you including a rainbow of colors? Are you putting in foods that support your liver and detoxification so that you can get toxins out, so you can get, you know, pesticides that are in the foods? Are you able to get all these things out of your system and biotransform them? So including, you know, foods that can support biotransformation, looking at their cycle, what's happening with their cycle, supporting that if it needs to be supported, looking at their lifestyle, relationships, lifestyle, you know, self-care.
Taking a really holistic approach and overview and trying to address things from every angle, really.
Yeah, it is a 360 degree view of looking at everything. And then also looking at where you think the issues may lie. So, you know, could it be gut health? And we might do a stool test to see what's going on in the gut, you know, and see, do you have any of those pathogens that could be driving the autoimmune? Because gut health is so important, you know, you want to look at the foods and everything, but you also want to, you know, look at the gut to see if there is any problematic, you know, bacteria imbalances there, so that you can support the gut and you can rebalance it, you know, putting in more of the good bacteria and, you know, eliminating the ones that could be problematic. There's a great lab in the USA called Cyrex Labs, and they look at, you know, you know, pathogens that are associated with Hashimoto's to see if you've created an immune reaction against them. They look at, you know, foods as well. So, and then, you know, if there's a hormonal issue, if we think it's hormonal issues, we might look at their hormones more. It all really depends on what comes out off, you know, an initial consultation and what you think, you know, the drivers could be. But it's taking a 360 degree view of everything, you know, eliminating toxins, looking at makeup, looking at skincare, cleaning all of that up. There's a list called the Dirty Dozen. So, you know, fruits and vegetables, which ones should we buy organic, which ones don't need to be bought organic, because the pesticides that are used in fruits and vegetables are hormone disruptors and have an, you know, impact as well. So there is a useful list called the Clean 15 and Dirty Dozen. So the Clean 15 are fruits and vegetables that you don't need to buy organic because they're clean, and it's usually because they've got a thicker outer layer, like bananas, like pineapple. Whereas the Dirty Dozen, the pesticides in those 12 foods leach quite deeply into the, you know, the fruit that you can't remove them even after washing. So it tends to be softer fruits and vegetables like, you know, apples and berries, and those are the things you want to buy organic.
Yeah. So just on that, what's your advice? I get asked this a lot, actually. What's your advice in terms of if people can't access or afford to buy the organic versions of those particular products? Would you say it's better not to have them at all, or would you say it's still better to have them even if you can't get the organic version?
I think it's, well, you can do an app like a soak, so where you take apple cider vinegar and you soak it in there for maybe 5 to 10 minutes. That can pull some of, you know, the toxins out of the fruit.
Okay.
And also I like to include them, you know, I get like a wash that you get, like the pesticide washes. Yeah. You know, you can use apple cider vinegar too, because then otherwise you're already eliminating fruits and vegetables out of your diet.
And there's a lot of fibers. Yeah. It's a tricky one, isn't it? Because they can sometimes be just, you know, a little bit out of people's reach. And my advice has usually been, if you really can't, then it's still best to include them. But as you say, I advise them to use a veggie wash or if they can, because otherwise, as you say, it's a big group of fruits and veg that you're not including. But yeah,
I agree.
That's a whole other conversation, where actually the organic stuff should be the cheaper stuff, shouldn't it? It should be the stuff
that's really
more accessible to all of us, because that's the natural stuff.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It really should be. And if they are, you know, if they can't, if they're getting non-organic, also just making sure you're supporting your liver to make sure it's able to get it out of the system. So, you know, castor oils can be really great in supporting the liver, dry skin brushing, you know, just helping, making sure you're drinking enough water, you know, making sure you're pooping daily, really, really important to get those toxins out. So just making sure you're supporting elimination pathways as well.
Yeah. And you just mentioned drinking water, and it's something that I think so many of us don't talk enough about. Actually, we sort of take it as a given, but good hydration is also really essential for, you know, absorbing nutrients, moving nutrients to cells, detoxification, elimination and excretion, and just all of our cellular processes. So having, you know, just ensuring that we are drinking enough every day is key too.
It's really, really important. It's foundational. You know, you could do so many other things, but if you're not doing some of the basics, like drinking enough water, that's, you know, where you want to start. And also, you know, getting a good water filter. I think that's really important. Yeah. Because there are so many toxins in our water that, you know, are not, you know, pulled out. So and they can be hormones, which can, you know, add to hormone disruption. So just getting a really good water filter, I think, is really helpful as well.
Yeah. So with the thyroid autoantibodies, if we've caught them early, so for example, they've been identified on lab tests, but as you say, we haven't progressed those sort of stage 2 or 3. What's the prognosis like? I mean, in terms of if somebody was then to address all of these issues, you know, really hone in on their diet, their lifestyle, get everything, reduce their stress, sleep really well, diversify their gut microbiome. Can they delay that quite substantially, that progression? Or is it still inevitable completely? Have you seen cases where they have then haven't progressed?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So that's the idea. That's why you always want to check the antibodies, because you want to get to it as early as possible. So if you get to it at stage 1, where you have the autoantibodies, but there's no tissue destruction, that's exactly where you want to catch it if possible, because there's been no tissue destruction.
Yeah.
So that is the best place to catch it if possible. Yeah. And you'd be working on exactly the same things as to, you know, whether you caught it then or whether you picked it up several years later. It's still trying to find out the trigger as to why this happened in the first place and address it and work on it. So regardless of where, when you catch it, when you pick it up, you'd be working on the triggers. But the best place would be at stage one, when there has been no tissue destruction.
And I imagine there are a lot of women out there who are being treated for hypothyroidism but haven't had their autoantibodies tested. Do you get people who come to you in that situation?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Usually, usually people have, you know, they're taking the medication or they've done a private test themselves and they've seen that they have autoantibodies and they don't know what to do about it.
Yeah.
That's usually when people come see me, and then we'll start to have a look at, and if they haven't had it tested, then we'll test it. You always want to know what you're dealing with. So you want to know whether it's an autoimmune or if it's, you know, if it's not autoimmune, you know, why has that happened? Is it because of nutrient deficiencies? Is it because of inflammation? You know, because it's, you'd work with it differently.
I mean, I think the basic message there is actually so positive and reassuring for women who, you know, who know they have the autoantibodies, but actually there's so much that can be done to then prevent that from becoming destructive to the thyroid gland, which is incredible, really.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So depending on when you pick it up, even if there has been tissue destruction, you can prevent more tissue destruction from happening by getting to the root cause. And then that way, you know, the hope would be that, you know, your medication won't have to go up, because otherwise it can slowly start creeping up over the years. So, you know, whenever you catch it, there's always a lot you can do to help support.
Yeah. And all the things.
And then the rest of your health too, because it will have a knock-on effect on everything else as well.
Exactly what I was about to say. Everything we've talked about actually just supports your overall health. So even, you know, even once your thyroid sort of stabilized, actually this will help all other aspects of your health and potentially reduce the probability or the risk of developing other autoimmune diseases if you've then started to address these sort of inflammatory areas and reduce that toxic load and all these other things.
Yeah, 100%. That's a really important point you bring up, because once you have one autoimmune condition, it's very likely you can get another and another. And so you don't want that to develop to further autoimmunity. So absolutely, that's a big thing. It can prevent it from other issues.
Yeah, amazing. So Farzana, what would your main take home points be for anyone listening who has any autoimmune disease or Hashimoto's particular?
Some of the stuff that we touched on, so things that you can, you know, incorporate, you know, today, you know, try to get 30 plant foods in, eat a rainbow, you know, diversity of what you're eating. You're eating for yourself, but you're also eating for your gut microbes. So, you know, trying to get a diversity in for them. Sleep is huge, you know, and so underrated. So, you know, trying to get 7 to 8 hours of sleep a night, reducing your stress, you know, blood sugar, balancing your meals, getting outside is huge, because, you know, our homes are more toxic than the outside air. So opening your windows, going for a walk, when you breathe the forest air, you're actually, you know, you're supporting your microbiome just by doing that. You're breathing in microbes, and, you know, that's really good. It's good for the nervous system too. It's been shown to bring down stress as well. That would be, you know, get outside, you know, try to reduce stress, sleep, and diversify your diet and avoid plastics.
Yeah.
As much as possible.
Yeah. Brilliant. Thank you, Farzana. I think that's been a great overview of Hashimoto's and autoimmune disease. And I think there's been lots of really useful take-home messages and tips in there that people can implement for themselves. If there are people who'd like to connect with you, find out more about what you're doing, or even consult with you, where can they get in touch?
So they've got my website, which is farzananasa.com, or I'm on Instagram quite a lot. So farzananasa_nutrition.
Yep.
Those are probably the places. Yeah.
I'll put links of those into the notes when the show goes out as well.
Amazing.
Thank you so much for joining me today. I really appreciate that. And I've really enjoyed that conversation. I think I've learned quite a bit as well.
Our pleasure. Thank you for having me. Always enjoy chatting about Hashimoto's and autoimmune. So thank you.
Thank you so much for listening today, and I really hope you've enjoyed this conversation. Do follow me on Instagram at thehealthspandoctor for information on the show, as well as recipes and health and nutrition advice. Until next week, let's live life better.